Welcome everyone to Tea House Chats, your monthly dive into the dynamic world of scholarly publishing, hosted by the Scholarly Publishing Tea House at LaGuardia Community College. I'm Liz Jardine, and I'm joined by my fellow tea-loving librarians, Ann Matsuchi and Thomas Cleary, here to share insights and spark conversation on everything from open access to peer review, all served with a side of fun. Whether you're charting your first publication or navigating the seas of digital scholarship, our tea house is open to all. Ready to see what's brewing? Let's get started, and don't forget to subscribe for your monthly sip of scholarly success. Today's episode is Getting Started. We're getting started with our podcast. Thank you for joining us on our first episode. And we're going to be focusing on what scholars who are new to academic publishing need to know. And we'll each contribute something that we think is most important for those who are getting started. So I'm going to start off. And what I think is very important for new scholars to know is to not get into this linear mode where you do your research, you're done. Then you write, you're done. Then you pick the journal you want to submit to, and then you do the submission. The journal you submit to can happen anywhere along the way while you're doing your researching, but it would be very helpful if you have a really good idea of where you want to submit your article, assuming that's what you're working on, about the time when you're starting the writing. That can eliminate a bunch of headaches later on. You don't want to write an article in a particular format and find out later, if you haven't selected your journal till after you're done, that your citation style needs to be changed. Or maybe the journal requires your article has to be in 5 sections, and these are the names of the sections, so you'd have to go back and redo everything. If you're like me, when I'm done writing an article, I'm done. I don't want to go back and start fiddling around with it. And that also takes that whole, where am I going to submit it? It's off your mind while you're writing. If you at least have a place in mind, then you can maybe focus a little bit more on your writing and not have that in the back of your mind. Where am I going to go? Where is it going to go?
It also helps you figure out your writing style too, because you can look at the journal, what other articles they've put out, and just see like, oh yeah, like this is the way these people write a bit, how academic it sounds or how heavy and jargony their field might be. Or you might find like 2 journals that have a similar tone, and you can sort of pick one and have one as a backup too. So I've found out.
Absolutely. Another thing, and I forgot where I read this, but it never entered my head, but there was a tip for when you've decided on a journal that you want to submit to, look at how often the articles that have been published cite in their lit reviews other articles from that journal.
Yeah.
Like, and you should at least cite at least 1 or 2 at minimum. But, you may have had this happen to you where they tell you, oh, why don't you, should add this to your literature review, and it's inevitably an article from that journal that you're submitting to. 1, if not more.
Yeah, I think of that. I've seen that happen before and didn't make that connection fully till just now.
Yes, so an article I'm working on right now, I went and looked and saw about what was the average, how many times or how many articles from that journal were appearing in the literature reviews. And I took that to heart and did that.
I know scholarly publishing can be overwhelming when you're getting started. So, I mean, that's just one other thing to remember is that, you know, of course you should ask your colleagues and your mentors in your field, but you also should feel free and comfortable to ask your librarian friends. You know, you can, the 3 of us are always happy to advise and to give you some tips and to ask those questions that might seem, you might feel are too basic. You know, we've all been there, so we're happy to help out with that. And I think my one thing to remember is just to be extremely cautious. To be put completely like paranoid about every cold request that comes into your inbox or tap on the shoulder or post conference inquiry. I mean, not to say that there are going to certainly be legitimate offers amidst all of that, right? But you just need to pause before you get too excited and jump on board with something that sounds really good, because things are increasingly complicated now, you know. And even if it is a legitimate publisher that you're getting an offer from, it may not be the right home or fit for your project, right? I mean, you need to consider all of these factors, you know, really as fully as you can. I know that everybody's got a timeline on their tenure clock and all that, but still, you have some friends and advisors here who can help you do a little deeper digging into where these inquiries are coming from.
I had one request once where like they're to market their journal as for like, hey, you should write for us. They're like, it was almost like a data business oriented journal, which didn't fully make sense because like my thing was related to business, related to data. But then they're like, oh yeah, one of the CEOs from WWE like is on the board or wrote for the journal. I'm like, what does librarianship have to do with wrestling? I don't know. Might be a crossover.
That's interesting.
didn't really. I was like, maybe this journal's not great.
Well, you're to your point. That's another reason why you should think about going back to my point. What journal do you want to publish in earlier rather than later? Because, you know, by the time you're done, inevitably it will take longer to write your article, at least if you're me, than you plan on. And then there may be a timeline, or you feel pressure, you feel panicked, I need a home, and you want to jump on the first person that, or journal that sounds like it's interested.
Mm.
But, you know, you want to be careful. And we'll be talking, there's a whole episode that can come out of, you know, how to find a good journal, and don't worry, we'll be covering that at some point in future.
Yeah, you really want the space and headspace sort of to like figure out if this is something to help you evaluate it beforehand, before also you have a finished product that you want to like ship to somebody.
Anybody.
Yeah.
So Thomas, yeah. What do you think is important?
Okay, so one thing I've been getting a lot of questions about recently was open access and coming up in journals. I mean, if you're not familiar with open access, it's a way to get your scholarship more broadly seen. It sort of gets rid of the pay-per-view barriers to get access to journals. So like, as librarians, we're used to navigating people through databases. Those databases cost a lot of money, but if you're not in one of those databases or you don't subscribe to one of those databases, you can't see your research. Open access makes it like available more broadly on the internet. Anyone can see it. But different journals have like all these different policies about if it's open access, what you can release as open access, if it's the original article, the finished article. And the ones that want you to release open access on their journal sometimes ask a lot for like a very large APC, like an article processing fee. That they'll say like, okay, we'll release your open access journal article under like what is it, OA Gold standard, I think, that, instead of the OA Green standard. Different standards which mean different things that we'll get into another time. But yeah, some of the fees, you know, go up to $2,000-$3,000 for a single article, and it's hard to tell if that's a real article, a real journal, even though most time it is, or if it's like a predatory journal saying like, hey, give us this money and we'll make sure your article gets released. So yeah, when you're going through those journals, like keep in mind if it's listed itself as a transitional journal or a hybrid journal, it might be a journal that lets you either pay to have it open access your article, or you don't necessarily pay to have it open access, it still gets published. And don't sort of let the journal or the publisher really bully you around into paying them access to that. And you can afterwards look through different avenues and different open access repositories to self-archive or self-publish your journal's I know CUNY, Liz does a lot of work with CUNY Academic Works, and that's like what we use at LaGuardia to get people to get access, when to provide access to their research, and it seems to every year gains a little bit more traction. I guess that's a pretty large database at this point, right?
That's a really good point about, like, if you see institutional repositories on your contract, that's what we're talking about here. And this is a really important thing to mention, and that people need to be more aware of it, you know.
The contract from the publisher. Yeah. Yeah. So they'll say if it's like, if you can, like, quote-unquote self-archive in our institutional repository. I think that's like the key term. But of like the different embargo periods, so sometimes it's a year, sometimes it's 2 years, so different for different fields I've seen. But yeah, something to sort of keep an eye on, and don't let them push you around to giving them whatever fees. Sometimes you get grant money to cover those fees, which is definitely better, but other ones they want you, like, if you're not grant supported, you have to end up paying out of pocket.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing we could also spend lots of time talking about, how both predatory and legitimate publishers spend a lot of effort and time into trying to get more money from our hard-earned work, right?
And your hard-earned work.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, as librarians, we're very divided about that. Not necessarily divided, but not very in favor for the publishers charging the open access fees. And I think of it as double dipping, sort of like they make you pay for it to get it published, and we have to pay them to release that information afterwards a bit. But that'll be another episode going over that a little bit more.
I know this, well, I'm going to ask a question, it'll be its own episode, but both Thomas and Anne, you both use the term predatory journals or predatory publishing. Someone want to give a quick definition in case any of our listeners are not familiar with that?
I mean, it's predatory. It's exactly what it sounds like. You know? I mean, I think in the online ecosystem, I mean, it's rife with predatory entities, right? It's just, you know, they're just commercially motivated persons or businesses, which are, the intent is purely profit, right? You know, in the old days, they used to be called vanity publishers, you know?
Yeah, you definitely see that. When you see their journals, it's always like a mismatch of different topics, different themes going on. Pretty bad editing.
And, you know, and
if
and,
any.
Yeah. And disturbingly, we always talk about like how legitimate publishers are sort of adopting the same sort of strategies and techniques, and also content farming that, you know, that the predatory entities, you know, invented, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they make the legitimate journals are sort of making it a little bit more difficult to find out which ones are predatory at this point. But you can go on about that. We'll see. Bit too much for right now. But yeah, just some things to keep in mind while you're sort of picking out a journal, planning on writing.
We don't mean to discourage people with all of these like things to watch out for, but it's just things you need to bear in mind, though. Like this is the terrain that exists, right? And it's definitely possible. It's just you just need to do some legwork before, you know, committing to a home for the work that you're passionate about getting out into the world, right?
Yeah, collectively, I think we've heard all the horror stories, so hopefully you don't have to.
And it's not just the research you do that you write about. You're going to need to do a little bit more research when you're trying to find a home for your article. Anything else to add about what newcomers to academic publishing need to know?
Not yet. I think we'll try to get people back on the next one.
Well, as we mentioned, there'll be several topics that we can devote entire episodes to. So join us next time and you'll find out what that is. We are the Scholarly Publishing Tea House at LaGuardia Community College. And as we reach the end of today's Tea House Chat, we'd like to thank you for joining us as we shared our thoughts on getting started with academic publishing as we get started with our own podcast. And we hope you found fresh ideas and inspiration for your own scholarly publishing journey. Let us hear from you. You can share your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for future topics with us. Your insights make our tea house richer, so you can connect with us via our website at commons.gc.cuny.edu or email. Our address is scholcomteahouse@gmail.com. That's scholcomteahouse@gmail.com. And let's keep the conversation brewing. Don't forget to subscribe to the Tea House chat blog on our website so you're notified when a new podcast episode is released. And share us with your colleagues who might enjoy our discussions. Together, we're building a community of scholars supporting scholars. Until next time, keep the kettle warm and your ideas flowing. Here's to your next scholarly breakthrough.